Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week with Ross.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm right. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I'm sure, like you, I've been trapped in election fever the last week or so.
Yes. It's been nuts the last, and
crazy.
As usually happens when the Conservatives do anything, they've shot themselves in the foot again. So, yes. Not that we're promoting one party or the other on this podcast.
No,
we're trying to be.
Absolutely not.
But yes. Anyway, so how's everything with you? What have you been up to?
Everything's great. I've had a big Netflix month this month. Do you remember last month I told you about Master of None?
Yes, yeah.
And how it didn't quite gel with me.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to issue a formal apology because I watched this second season and it's really good. I'm at the point where I might watch the first season again because the second season, I really enjoyed it. Either I missed something the first time round or the second season is just better, but it's really good.
So, okay, that's cool.
Definitely good for a watch. Also, Kimmy Schmidt's still going, which we watched the first two seasons of and now the third season. I don't think we've got to the end just yet, my fiance and I, but yeah, it's really good. Better Call Saul, of course, is still going strong.
Yes, loving
There's
that.
Another one tomorrow, or I suppose it's today when this goes out.
Yes.
And then, oh yeah, F is for Family came back this month. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. Few people have mentioned that to me though, so I might go check it out.
Bill Burr's animated sitcom about, I think it's not about his family, but it's, if you know his comedy, it seems like the sort of thing that might have happened to him.
Right.
Sort of. But I think he said that it's not about his family. But he wrote it and he's in it and it's really, really funny. Definitely not one for young people. but right. Really, really good. It's like The Simpsons, but darker.
Awesome. I will have to go check that out.
And also Flaked came back this season, which might be a bit more, I don't know, a bit different for something you might be interested in, Dave. But this is Will Arnett's sort of drama comedy.
Yeah.
About an alcoholic who's down on his luck and trying to get his life together. They only did 6 episodes this season, but it's still a really good season, so definitely recommend that if anyone's looking for anything to try out.
Yeah. Netflix are really hitting it out of the park at the moment.
Crazy stuff. I've been glued to it. Did I tell you about my Now TV box, by the way?
Oh, no.
Remember I told you they sent me a free Now TV box?
Yes, I remember.
It works and it's great and it's really good.
Good.
Well, if you're watching, I found that if you're watching catch-up stuff, you know, like the iPlayer or Channel 4, is it 4OD still? 4, I suppose it is now, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, they seem quicker on the PlayStation. Don't know why, but the remote's a little bit unresponsive. Maybe it's because it's a refurb. I don't know. But for that stuff, I stick to the PlayStation. But for the Now TV, I'm all about the Now TV box. It's really good. And, of course, you know, it's got all your YouTube and your Spotify and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And ITV, which, of course, the PlayStation doesn't have an ITV app, whereas the Now TV box does.
So
there's a little tip for you.
Good.
My fiance turned me on to something. She said, watch this, you might like this. And I started watching it. I thought, oh, I recognize that guy. He was in Fargo, and it was Colin Hanks, who's in Fargo season one, I think.
Yes.
He's in a sitcom on Amazon called Life in Pieces.
Yes.
I've heard of it, Dave.
I have.
Really, really good. So every episode, there's this family. It's kind of like, you know, Modern Family.
Yes.
It's not unlike that, but it's not like a what do they call it, mockumentary. It's not like that.
No.
But they take these four different areas of the family. So there's the grandparents, and then they've got three kids, and each one of those is married and has their own thing going on.
Yeah.
And then they're told in sort of 10-minute, in fact, it's probably less than that. It's probably 5-minute stories that all sort of tie together a little bit. That's
yeah.
why it's called Life in Pieces, because they're in these four different stories every episode.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm halfway through season two, and it's really, really good. Like, really good.
It is. It's. I've been watching that. I stumbled across it sort of, you know, I found it on Amazon, and I absolutely love that series.
It's fantastic.
It's just brilliant. Really, really funny. It's one of the funniest sitcoms I've seen in a while.
Definitely. But yeah, really good. I think the second season was this year, possibly.
Yes, it was.
Or within the last year, at least. So, I mean, when the awards roll around this year, Dave, I think that's definitely a contender for me.
Yeah, it is for me as well. I mean, it's one of those ones that's going to, when we do the Geek Town Awards, it's one of those ones that'll probably struggle to pick up votes because of the fact that it's on Amazon. But yeah, I love that series. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's really funny. It was, it did go out this year because it was actually going on episode by episode up until about a month ago.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, so it's you're not very far behind, and it will the new season when that comes out will go on episode by episode as well. So
fantastic. Yeah, but that's really good. And going on, this is a nice. There's a couple of nice links here. Colin Hanks was in Fargo. New season of Fargo, Dave.
Yes, there is. I still haven't caught up with it, but yes, I've watched some of the first episode, but I haven't got back to it yet.
What did you think of that first episode?
Well, as I say, I got about, I don't know, 20 minutes into it. And
okay, so you've really scratched the surface.
Yeah, I haven't really got far enough into it to judge it one way or another at the moment.
I'm definitely enjoying it, but I would say for me, I think I've seen two. Is that right? There's been two out? Yeah, I think I've seen two. And there's another one, I think it's Wednesdays on Channel 4. I'm not as blown away as I was with the other seasons. Maybe that's because I've sort of seen it now. I was saying, my fiancé was saying that with every program, you sort of tell me vaguely what's going on, but there's only two programs where you'll tell me word for word everything that's happening on screen, and that's that was Mad Men and Fargo, because there's so much, like in the first two seasons, you know, there's so much tension all the time and you don't know what's going to happen next, and you know, and there's this thing about, I was saying that every season at some point someone gets murdered and that's the corner of the series and what happens, someone's going to get murdered and there's going to be a sort of gangster element somewhere.
That
happened, and yes, there is, and it's going, it's sort of standard Fargo fare, but I don't think, I'm not crazy about it yet.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It hasn't done anything to make me go, wow. You know, actually, the second season had, not to spoil anything, that weird bit towards the end. Do you remember that?
I, to be honest, I haven't caught the second season yet.
Oh, okay.
I need to go back. But I think I know what you're referring to, because I've heard bits about it.
There's a turn like that, but it's more or better or earlier, or there's more of it, whatever, that would be interesting enough to keep me in. But I'm not entirely sure. It might fizzle out. I don't want it to fizzle out, but it might. And that would be bad, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And going from that, of course, I don't know the actor's name because I'm horrible. But Lupin from Harry Potter is in that, playing a sort of Cockney villain bad guy.
Right.
And he's really good in that. And he's also really good in Wonder Woman.
Right. Yes.
How about that?
Yeah, very, very good linking. Very good linking. So, yeah, we're, we've both seen Wonder Woman now. So, we are going to talk about Wonder Woman with some spoilers. So,
spoilers.
There's your spoiler warning. We are going to spoil bits of Wonder Woman.
Sure. So, do you do an end spoiler warning or put like a link?
What I'll do is I'll put music under this bit. So if you want to skip forward, if there's music still playing underneath it, then skip forward a bit more. Yeah.
But right. At the end, we should give a good and bad, possibly.
Yes. Yeah.
Just all so right. people know. So what did you think, Dave?
I really enjoyed it, actually. I think it's not perfect. There are bits of it that I think slowed down a little bit too much. I thought it starts really well. The Themyscira stuff works really well.
Yes.
Slows down a little bit when she ends up coming to sort of man's world. And one of the criticisms I have of DC movies is the fact that they give out a lot of the best gags in the trailers.
Yeah, and this is a growing problem. Even with Homecoming, I feel like I've seen that movie. I don't need to see that movie.
Yeah. So am I, but Marvel's done a lot of that. But even, you see, with the Marvel stuff, they seem to manage to hold a lot of it back, even yes. though you feel like you've seen all of it. They still hold quite a lot back. Whereas with DC, a lot of the kind of funnier gags are in the trailers, and you kind of like, well, I mean, and I know it's not a gag film and there is emotional moments in it and stuff, but that sort of annoys me when
I mean, it's not a Guardians laugh a minute, but
no
you could just have less in the trailer. I mean, people aren't going to not see Wonder Woman. That's exactly. not going to happen. You'll be fine.
They need to sort of sort that out, you know. Mm. I know the trailer needs to sell the film, but I think you could have done that without giving away quite as much. And I mean, they, at least with this, they kept the villain under wraps, which is unlike Batman v Superman, but
yes, I thought that was a really good turn, actually.
Yeah I thought that was quite a good turn, although given that who was playing the character.
Yeah, we can just say, right? Is that fine?
Yes, yeah, we can say.
Great. Are you gonna...
we can, but you know, anybody that's seen it knows it was David Thewlis who plays the character. I think partly because of his Harry Potter connection and the fact that that's a sort of very Harry Potter-esque twist.
So I
kind of always view him when he's playing a character as slight suspicion.
Did you see it coming, Dave?
As I say, in the back of my mind, I did wonder, but I didn't out and out see it coming.
I guess this isn't much of a spoiler, but the bad guys are the Germans, because apparently people think the only bad guys in any world war are just the Germans and they did everything on their own.
Yeah.
Which I don't get, but I mean, there's a big bad German and you sort of think, she's not just going to off the German, everyone's a winner. That's not how this is going to go down. Surely there must be some other aspect to this.
So
I don't think I was that shocked, but I mean, for it to be him, I was like, oh, okay, it's that guy from earlier. All right, okay. So that was maybe a bit more of a surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of with you. Although I think the script is a lot better than a lot of the DC scripts have been.
Yeah.
I think it was much more cohesive. It was a much better film overall. I think they did a really, you know, decent job with it. There were a lot of standard tropes in there. You know, there was a lot of sort of, okay, fight slow bit, big fight at the end, you know, with a misdirection in there. You know, so there were certain things that you could
see.
Sort of CGI
fight at the end.
Yeah, you know, and the CGI fight hadn't bothered me as much as some big CGI fights
definitely
have done. It would have annoyed me more had that drug that she gave the, you know, had that drug that she gave the German guy been sort of turned him into some big monster, and that would have bugged me. But the fact that it is a god fighting, well, he calls her a god, but technically I would have said she's a demigod, because,
well, I mean, let's not get into semantics.
Yeah, if we're splitting hairs here, because her mother wasn't a god, she wasn't a goddess, sorry, you know. So
we need to establish, how are we pronouncing the actress's last name? Because I've heard people have corrected me either way on both pronunciations.
Are we saying it's Godot, isn't it?
Are we saying Godot or Gadot, or how are we?
Godot, I think.
Godot, we'll go with Godot.
With Godot. I'm sure people might disagree, but yes.
She continues to be excellent.
Yes, she's brilliant in it. I think she's a perfect bit of casting for this.
Really good.
You know, she was great in Batman v Superman, although she didn't have a huge amount to do, but she's really good in this. And
Robin Wright, born to be a sort of gladiator woman.
Oh, yes, totally. Yeah. Definitely. I think she was great. I think that the story as a whole is really nicely packaged together. As I say, it's a little predictable if you know those sort of
I think that
Hollywood tropes, but
if it wasn't for because a lot of the best Marvel movies lately, I say lately, after sort of Avengers 2, I guess, are the ones that stand out because they're different. So like Ant-Man was like a heist movie, so that was really different.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange was really different because there was the whole mystical element. If it wasn't for Thor and Captain America 1, you wouldn't have, I think this would have been really different and a really interesting thing to show.
Yeah.
But because those movies we've seen sort of Greek or Norse, or like we've seen ancient gods who trifle in, like talk to the humans and come and fight with or against the humans.
Yeah.
And we've seen wars, that's fine. We know about that. And I think especially with Captain America, the sort of after she leaves, what's the place called?
Themyscira.
After she leaves there, it becomes very, oh, didn't this happen in Captain? Yeah, this was in Captain America. This was also in Captain America. Oh, and then that was in Captain.
Yeah, and the guy, the hero, obviously spoiler, the hero character that she's in love with dies in a plane at the end.
So sort of last kind of like,
well, this is completely Captain America.
having said that, there's a lot of, I thought that there was a couple of distinctions in that. First of all, there's that whole sort of, you know, one of the big themes towards the end is that the bad guy might not be this evil god. It might just be some people are bad. And both sides have got bad people. Mm. And there's a lot of negativity on both ends. And I think that's good in the same way that what it reminded me of. Do you remember in Rogue One where it was kind of like, you know what? The rebels have got some not nice people as well. And it's not just black and white, these are good guys, these are bad guys. It reminded me of that a little bit, and I thought that was a really nice...
Yeah.
Because thinking back to Captain America, it was the American guys, good guys, German guys, bad guys.
Yeah, and to be fair, in Captain America, they were following a guy who had a red skull for a face. So
I mean, that's very true, Dave, that's an excellent point.
Kind of hard to get a decent, you know, good guy job when you've got a red skull for a face.
Yes, maybe he tried and that was how he ended up.
Yeah, fine, I'll be evil.
Also, I think the gender balance was really good. So it wasn't that she was the hero and then Chris Pine takes the exact opposite role and he's the damsel in distress.
Yeah.
They both did a heroing and he was like your sort of roguish World War One type of pilot guy, pilot flying ace type fella, but she also was, you know, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Well, no. I thought that was more balanced.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think the characterizations are well put together. I think the plot overall infinitely better than anything else that they've done so far. It's a good stepping off point for the next upcoming movies.
They continue some Snyder-esque bad CGI though, which I don't like.
Yeah, well, there is a certain amount of that. You've got Justice League coming up next with Joss Whedon now in control of it, which is fantastic news. You know, although as I said before, it's highly unfortunate the way that he ended up taking over, but
it's not sure how much he'll actually do on it.
But he is finishing stuff off, and so we don't know how much tweaking. But it sounds like he was involved earlier than that because he was involved in the rewrites by the sounds of it as well.
Right, okay.
So he's, because that's why he ended up taking over, was because they'd already brought him on board to help out with some of the rework stuff. So that's why he was the natural person to kind of hand over to. So we've got that coming, we've got the Batgirl movie coming and
Fantastic.
Cyborg and other things. So I think hopefully they're in the right place.
Yeah,
now. And it's a
this
good
is this is the
point.
One that did the good. This is the one where this is your Iron Man one. That's like this is good. This is good stuff here.
Yeah, this is a really good starting off point, I think. So you know, hopefully they can keep it going from this point on. That would be good. But think generally, I would say, thumbs up for this.
Thumbs up. General thumbs up.
General thumbs up, I would say.
I have a question, Dave. This is one I thought I'd better blow past you. So the Amazon women, right?
Yeah.
They don't reproduce. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, to have been around this long, they must live forever, or at least for a very long time.
Yes.
How come some of them are older than others?
They obviously age at different rates.
Is that an answer?
Clearly. I that thought did pass through my mind. I thought it was the fact that when she leaves the island, she stops aging, but then...
The other women... Like Robin Wright, yeah, so, older than some of the other women?
Yeah, so I don't exactly know. But I know what you mean, because that thought passed through my head as well.
I'm not saying the whole universe is flawed, Dave. I'm just saying that, you know, there are holes here.
I'm sort of with you on that. They could just age very, very slowly. I don't know.
Did you catch the, you know, when, I think this bit's actually in the trailer, but do you know when Dr. Poison throws that gas into the room with all those guys in? And then he throws in a gas mask and she says, the gas mask isn't going to help. And then he goes, but they don't know. And they have like a weird laugh. That was weird. That was like a 60s Batman type affair. And it was like they were sort of... That was really camp for me.
Yeah. So, I mean... Overall, good movie. A few little missteps here and there, but I think certainly good overall, good starting point. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go from here.
Absolutely.
So, anything else from you this week?
No, that's it. I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, but that was it. We had double XP weekend this weekend. It's really good.
Good. Yeah, computer game wise, Skyrim. I've been on. It was a conversation we had like a few weeks ago, and Matt mentioned that he was trying Skyrim, and I thought, you know, it's one of those games that I love Fallout, but I've never actually managed to get to the end of Skyrim. So I thought, there's nothing else imminently kind of coming out. There's stuff coming up in the future, but there's nothing coming out right now. So I'm going to sit down. I'm going to mod up Skyrim and go through it. So I'm still working my way through that right now. And I think I'm about level 30 at the moment. So,
are there any super good mods you'd recommend?
There are quite a few. If you're playing it on PC, actually, I don't know what the modding's like on the boxes, but certainly on the PC, there are things like there's a mod to take off the restriction from the inventory. So you can basically carry as much stuff as you
like. That's not playing the game.
It's just one of those things that really annoys me is being weighed down by stuff. So, I know that's a little bit of a cheat, but yes, I've taken the mod that expands the inventory. But there are some great mods for improving like the faces, the water, replacing a lot of the textures for high-res textures. I'm actually playing the special edition version, but you can actually mod those up even more. So I'm playing with a lot of those mods in. There's little things like there is a horse whistle mod. So when you can't find your horse, you can blow your horse whistle and it turns up, which is quite
a Witcher 3 style horse whistle, and it'll be on a roof somewhere.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So they're quite useful. Trying to think what else I've used. There's other little bits and pieces. A lot of the stuff I'm using are graphics tweaks and that sort of stuff. So
as far as your console support goes, I think it's really good on Xbox One and not so good on PlayStation 4.
Right, okay.
But some of them are available. I think it's ones that don't do touch a certain aspect of it, maybe.
Right, okay.
I don't know. There's something where they can't get past a certain thing because of the restrictions, but I think texture stuff generally is okay.
Okay, yeah, there are some great texture mods out there to boost that up quite a lot. So I've been using those. There's a really good mod as well, which takes the loading screens out from the cities. Because, you know, a lot of the cities you walk through the city gate, there's a thing that actually will take the loading screen out. So it loads everything in. So you can just walk in and out of the cities.
It was a big deal in, the third Batman game where they said, if you walk in a door, no loading screen, nothing happens, you just carry on. And that was like a massive deal.
Yeah, I mean, there are still loading screens when you walk into the buildings, but it takes...
just not into the city.
Yeah, but it takes all the loading screens out of the city, so that's quite good. In TV-wise, though, Netflix again, Orange is the New Black is back as well. I'm 3 episodes into that. I really like that series. It's works really well and makes it really kind of binge-watching fair this time around, because it's set over the course of 3 days. So, because if you remember, the last season ended on a riot with one of the inmates having a gun to the head of one of the guards. Yes. So it ends at that point last season. So it picks up literally at that point. Then you see the next 3 days of sort of the riot and the consequences of that and what sort of carries on, you know, afterwards. So it's basically set just over that time period, which means that you're kind of very much watching you know, it's like, it's very much a kind of, oh, I'll watch the next one. Oh, well, what's the next one? So I'm doing that quite a lot. That's quite good. Orphan Black is also back as well, which I haven't actually managed to start yet, but that I'm really looking forward to. That's back for its final season, so that's been good. Doctor Who, have you been watching any Doctor Who this season?
No, I'm not a Doctor Who guy.
Okay. Doctor Who brought back the Ice Warriors this time around, and there was an alien at the end from Alpha Centauri, I think, which showed up, which apparently went nuts on Twitter. I didn't realize that was an old character that they'd slotted in, right, as an Easter egg, but apparently it was. So that was kind of cool. I also have hats off to whoever the guy was that came up with the Ice Warrior's weapon, because it was basically you fired it at the person and it crumpled the person into a little ball.
Oh, wow.
So it was just genius. I love that.
There's nothing ice-related about that.
No, there isn't. But
they should have a Mr. Freeze freeze ray.
Yeah, so you'd think so, wouldn't you? But I thought that was excellent. I really enjoyed that. That's been most of the stuff that I've been watching this week. The other thing that I just wanted to mention is, of course, Adam West, who we sadly lost this week. He apparently, it was, 88, I think, when he died. Apparently a short battle with cancer, I think, by the sounds of it. He is part of the reason why I'm kind of the geek I am today, was watching, they used to run those Batman 66 live action TV show episodes. They used to run those Saturday mornings. And that was my first introduction to Batman, and was really kind of why I became such a fan of the character. So I'm very sad to hear him die. I mean, he was a wonderful guy, had a great sense of humor by all accounts, by the sides of it as well, because, you know, he was mayor of Quahog in Family Guy as well. So he was doing quite a lot of voiceover work. They did a Batman 66 cartoon only last year.
Yeah. As well.
I mean, it was a character that was, you know, he'd done work before then, but that character just defined his entire career after that. Yeah. And
it's good that he sort of embraced that as well. He didn't shy away from.
Yeah. You know, because you do get a lot of people that will kind of shy away from those sort of big roles. Definitely. And he didn't. And was a huge, huge fan of the character, even after, you know, years after it finished and still carried on. So just wanted to say, very sorry to see him go, but, you know, thank you for all the wonderful time that you gave me watching the TV series. It was fabulous. So if there's nothing else on the general stuff, we'll move on to some film and TV news.
Right.
Film and TV news this week. Start off with the renewals and cancellations as usual. Fox has cancelled 24 Legacy, which we sort of saw coming. They are apparently considering other versions of 24. Did you watch any of 24 Legacy?
No, I didn't. But I was told some generally good things, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we watched it. Obviously, I watched it, and Matt watched it religiously because he's a huge 24 fan. And we did a 24 podcast for Entertainment Talk as well. But it was one of those things that I really enjoyed it, but I think it slightly suffers by the whole 24 concept.
Yeah.
Not the setting, but I think the whole timing thing is, I don't know. I think it's a bit too restricting, and maybe there is something they can do with that. Maybe they can chop the hours up somehow. Yeah. So you do, it's done in real time, but you're doing an hour here, then maybe skip an hour and then another hour, you know, because at the moment what they're doing is they're doing them as 12 episodes and then putting a 12-hour time jump at the end. Whereas what they maybe could do is put, like, you know, you do an hour, then skip an hour, then do another hour, and it maybe would free them up to be able to move from different locations and, you know, and do that. So I don't know. It's interesting that they are saying they're still considering what else they can do with it, because obviously this was supposed to be a kind of big reboot, even though they did bill it as a limited series.
Yeah.
It's not entirely clear why they're not continuing this format, other than, I mean, the numbers weren't as good as they wanted on Fox in the US, so that's part of the reason.
Right.
The other reason might be that Corey Hawkins, who played the lead in this, played Eric, is tied up on various other things. He's got some more stuff to do on The Walking Dead because he basically disappeared from that show, so they need to resolve that storyline. He's currently on Broadway as well, so that was part of the problem, is if they wanted to bring it back in the autumn, they couldn't anyway.
Right.
So that was always going to have to be delayed.
They could have a team. If you have a 24 team, then 24 hours is like more because there's more people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious thing to do would be to go back to some of the other ancillary characters like Tony Almeida, who was brought back in. He was in a few episodes but was a bit underused in this series. And you sort of think he'd be quite an interesting character to follow on. So maybe you do a 24 series which is based around him, possibly.
Yeah.
As a sort of anti-hero character, because he was sort of an agent that turned bad and then he's kind of working in a kind of grey area now. So he might be an interesting one to follow. There are other characters as well you could bring in rather than just going completely for a new lead. I mean, there are various ways they can go with it. So I'm interested to see what they do with that. Another news, this isn't a renewal or cancellation as such, but I know a lot of people have been asking about the show. Ryan Murphy's TV show Feud has been picked up by BBC Two. Not entirely sure when they're going to air it yet, but that has been picked up by BBC Two, who also air the other Ryan Murphy show, American Crime Story. So I think, I mean, it's very rare the BBC pick up stuff, but they seem to be quite into the Ryan Murphy stuff, so... So, you know, that's...
I watched that. I've told you before, I really enjoyed the American Crime Story.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to them doing the rest of that. They're just... It's... American Crime Story is coming back, but I think they're both going to be next year, the next two seasons. They're actually filming the Versace one next, but that's actually going to go out third because the second season of American Crime Story is based around Katrina, and then there is the third season which is based around the Versace murder. The reason they're doing it this way is because they can't get the relevant permits to be able to shoot in New Orleans during hurricane season, obviously, because it's hurricane season. So ironically, doing something about hurricanes and then can't and aren't allowed to shoot in there. So they've had to delay the filming of that. So it will be filmed after they've finished Versace, but will air before, apparently. But they're both going to come out next year with about a six-month gap in between, apparently. So there's that. Just dropped today as well, news that Luther is coming back for a fifth season with Idris Elba, which I'm looking forward to because that's a fantastic show. Have you been watching Luther?
No, but I'm told really good things. Everyone I know says you've got to watch Luther.
There aren't that many episodes of it as well. So
maybe I'll check that out.
It's I think they are on Netflix. They're either on Netflix or Amazon. I have seen them kicking around. So,
oh yeah, I think I've seen maybe Netflix, I think.
Yeah, so they're worth catching up on though, because there's not that many of them, you know, so you can get through them quite easily. And it's a fantastic performance from Idris Elba on that. The other one that they've announced for is getting a second season is a Sky One show called Sick Note, which you won't have heard of yet because they've announced that's got a second season, but the first season hasn't started airing yet. It's a show that stars Rupert Grint as a character called Daniel Glass. He's a compulsive liar stuck in a failed relationship and dead-end insurance job and under the thumb of an irrepressible boss called Kenny West, who's played by Don Johnson. Miami Vice's Don Johnson.
Yeah.
So just when things couldn't get any worse, Daniel is wrongly diagnosed with a terminal illness by his incompetent Dr. Ian, who is played by Nick Frost. When the error comes to light, the doctor convinces Daniel to hide the truth of his misdiagnosis from colleagues, friends and family, in a lie that spirals wildly out of control. So it's a comedy. It's coming to Sky One in the autumn. They're actually set up a new, what they're calling a sort of adult comedy slot, which is 10 p.m. And it's going to be host of edgier and grown-up comedies. So, and it's going to be a 10 p.m. slot, which will come to Sky One and Now TV. They've also got a show called Bliss, which stars Stephen Mangan and Heather Graham coming, and Bounty Hunters, which is Jack Whitehall and Freddie Sybourne. So those are the three that they're starting off with. So they've got a bunch of these kind of adult comedies coming. They've also announced that the second season of Sick Note is going to have Lindsay Lohan in it, who's going to play the daughter of the Don Johnson's character for the second season. So they've obviously got a lot of faith in it because the first season hasn't aired yet. which is good.
Have we got a date for the first season?
Autumn at the moment. They've not said exactly when yet, but it's autumn on Sky One that's coming. It was originally commissioned for Sky Atlantic, but it's coming to Sky One now.
Sounds worth a go.
So, yes, that sounds like it could be quite good, worth a go. In other TV news, we've got a new casting announcement for Legends of Tomorrow. Tala Ash, who you may know the name because she was in American Odyssey and she was in Smash as well, she is joining the teammates on the Wave Rider as a new character. It's a Muslim American woman from the year 2030 who lives in a world of contradictions. The technology has brought about an incredible change in the future, but human nature unfortunately hasn't made the same leap forwards. Fear, prejudice and lack of care for the planet has forced the character Zari, who she plays, to become a grey hat hacktivist. She's a computer nerd with a wry combative attitude, and she's a woman living a double life who doesn't realise that she also has a secret latent powers derived from an ancient mystical source. Now, this is an interesting character because she's called Zari Adriana Tomaz. Adriana Tomaz is a character that is in DC comic books. Zara Adriana Tomaz isn't. So it's a take on a character. There's a fairly obvious reason for that if you know who Adriana turns into, because the character and the amulet that they talk about, this mystical amulet or mystical source of energy, they're related to Black Adam, who is part of the Shazam kind of bunch of heroes and villains, and she's called Isis. So, not unsurprisingly, they're not overly keen to use that name in the show.
Kind of that. That's gone through the meetings, and they've said there could be kind of that.
Yeah, that's why I doubt you'll see that name pop up in the show. So she's called Zari, but basically, yes, it's a future version of the character Isis, who has the amulet of Isis, which is the thing that gives her these kind of powers. It's going to be a future version of that, which is a way of kind of avoiding them having to use the name, I think. And also because of the fact that you have got Black Adam showing up in a Shazam movie, Sid. So they might be using the character there and they don't want it to cross over directly. So that's going to be kind of interesting. The new season, there is a description out for the new season of Legends as well, which seems like Rip Hunter could be not a bad guy, but could be kind of at odds with the rest of the Legends. Because apparently Rip has set up a new Time Bureau as a way of kind of sorting out problems with the timeline. Because if you remember, the end of Legends last season ended up with them having completely screwed everything up by going back to a point in time where they already were and meeting themselves. That's completely screwed the timeline. So they ended up kind of landing back on Earth, but there were dinosaurs everywhere, and that's sort of where we left them. So it seems that Rip Hunter, who was back to his normal self, having kind of lost his memory last season, he's now back to his normal self, has set up this Time Bureau as the sort of new sheriffs in town. So the Legends have kind of disbanded, but it ends up with Sarah getting them all back together again. So it's going to be interesting. It sounds like there's not many changes in the crew that are already there, but Zari is going to be a new addition to that crew. We'll see where that goes. That should be back in the autumn in the UK, as will Flash and Arrow and Supergirl as well. No news on what's happening with Black Lightning yet. That's the other new show. But that seems to be probably running afterwards. So we probably get that early New Year or after Legends is finished, maybe. We're not sure yet.
Do you think they'll sync that up like the others eventually?
At the moment they're saying, oh, it's not part of the same universe. I strongly suspect by the second season it will be part of the same universe. But at the moment it's a separate entity on its own. But it is obviously made by Greg Berlanti and the same team. So we'll see what happens with that. On other news, we have another vampire drama coming, or vampire-ish drama coming. It's one of those sort of things. Mark Paul Gosselaar has been in various different things. He was in Franklin and Bash. He's been in NYPD Blue. He's been starring...
Franklin and Bash, that was a good show.
Was a great show. I really enjoyed that show. he's been in Pitch, which was a show in US. I don't think it made it over here. He's been in that recently. Of course, the thing that he's most well known for people of my age, is Saved by the Bell. He played Zach Morris. So that's probably... I bet he hates that, but that's the thing he's most well known for. So he's starring in this new vampire drama called The Passage. It's a new pilot, so it might not go to series, but it's being commissioned by Fox. It's an adaptation of Justin Cronin's trilogy of novels. It's written by Liz Heldens, who wrote Deception and Mercy. Show is described as an epic, character-driven thriller that morphs into a post-apocalyptic odyssey. It spans two timelines over the course of a century. Present-day storyline is set in a world which has been infected by a virus which turns people into bloodthirsty monsters. Show follows a 10-year-old girl called Amy, who appears to have powers which allow her to communicate with the virals, which are the monsters. When Amy is rescued from the monsters by a couple who are living in an isolated group in Palm Springs, through flashbacks, she relates the story of her connection to the virals and the genesis of the outbreak. So it turns out she was placed in foster care after the death of her mother. Amy was then retrieved by Brad Wolgast, who's played by Mark Paul Gosselaar, to take part in something called Project Noah. It's basically a secret government organisation that thought, I know, let's make super soldiers out of death row inmates. What could possibly go wrong with that idea? And, of course, ended up making them into monsters instead. So
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, so in this case, the monsters are giving some psychic abilities which allows them to control their captors and escape. Once that goes wrong, they think, I know, because we're evil mad scientists, we'll try experimenting on a child because their brain is less developed, so maybe we won't have that problem anymore. They think that will help them solve the problem. That's where Amy comes in, but Wolgast realises what they're trying to do and ends up kind of running away with and escaping with Amy. But it turns out she might be very well the key to saving humanity from this kind of vampire monster plague thing that's happening. So, I mean, it's quite an involved story by the sounds of it, but it does sound quite interesting. I quite like the sound of it. It'll be interesting to see him in a kind of dark, serious role as well, because, I mean, Franklin and Bash was a fun kind of procedural show, which I really enjoyed, and obviously Saved by the Bell was a kids comedy. I don't know what he played in NYPD Blue or what he plays in Pitch. Those are the only things I've seen him on. So I, you know, it's kind of going to be interesting to see him in that. But he's quite a good actor, so, you know, I could be quite interesting, that one. And also in the news this week, Misfits. Do you remember the show Misfits?
Yes, I do remember Misfits. Didn't that have, what was his name? Worst person in the universe from Game of Thrones.
Yes. Ewan Rowan.
Didn't that start his whole thing?
Yeah, Ewan Rowan was in that, yes. That did. It was the first kind of big thing he was in, really. Mm. So Misfits is getting a US remake, apparently. Freeform, which are one of the other ABC channels over there, have given it a pilot order to remake the show. It's being made by Fake Empire, which is the production company run by Gossip Girls Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage. They've got a Diana Ruggiero Wright, who apparently was involved with Night Zombie and Veronica Mars, serving as writer and showrunner. I mean, the original series, for those who didn't know, is basically a group of young offenders that were given community service, and then one day when they're out on community service, there is a freak lightning storm that hits them and gives them all various superpowers. That was the basic setup for it. This version, they've got some casting already. They've got Ashley Lanthrop, who is in Sirens and 50 Shades Darker. He's playing Antonio Thomas's character in the original. The characterizations are basically the same. She was kind of a spoiled, vapid, middle-class party girl. So, you know, that character. You've got Trey Hall, who is in a show called Rebel. He plays Curtis, who is a cocky football player in this. I think he was a runner. He's played by Nathan Stewart Jarrett in the original, and he was a runner. Then you've got Jake Carnival, who's in Nurse Jackie. He's played sneaky, egomaniac con artist Nathan, who was played brilliantly by Robert Sheenan in the UK version. And then you've got Ally McDonald, who's in Orphan Black and Cardinal. She's playing a trashy, street smart girl with the temper, which was the Chav character played by Lauren Socha in the UK.
Do they have
version.
That in America? Do you think that carries Chav?
No, it doesn't. It's going to be, I mean, they've used the term trashy on the press release, but it is basically the Chav character that Lauren played. They haven't cast the Ewan Rowan character yet. So that he was he was Simon, the shy social outcast, but he ends up with quite a big part as the seasons go on. So they haven't actually cast him yet. That's still waiting to see. Howard Overman, who's the guy that wrote the English version, he's still on board as an exec producer, so they've not kind of completely gone behind his back. He's still around. I mean, I'm not entirely sure a US remake of this is necessary. The US has been doing better with remakes recently of British shows. I mean, The Office obviously went really well. It tends to be comedies, though. I don't know how this will go down. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think the ones that are sort of quintessentially have a British aspect, like The Inbetweeners didn't do particularly well, did it?
Yeah.
And so those ones are a bit different. But I don't know if this is a bit more... Maybe it's better. Maybe this is fine as a premise.
I think... It depends. I think Misfits, the original show, was very British.
Yeah.
But it is an idea which you can translate into US, I think, a lot easier. Thing that makes me slightly uneasy is it's on Freeform.
Right.
And, you know, it's ABC, so that's sort of Disney-ish. And I know Freeform's more their teen kind of thing.
Right, right.
My worry is they're just going to knock all the edges off it, and it's... It's going to end up being a bit overly not as spiky as it needs to be, you know? We'll see. But it's only a pilot at the moment. We'll see how far it gets. So that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
So this week's interview is with the production designer Lawrence Bennett. Lawrence is a veteran of the Hollywood production design. He worked on Carl Sagan's original Cosmos series. He's worked on films such as The Artist and Crash. He worked on Sneaky Pete, the brilliant, brilliant Amazon show. He's worked a bit on Grey's Anatomy. He also recently worked on Wizard of Lies, which was the HBO special which ran on Sky Atlantic over here about Bernie Madoff, starring Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer. He's aired recently on Sky Atlantic, so I think it's probably still on Sky On Demand and Now TV if you want to go and look for it. Really, really good. We talked to him quite a lot about the Wizard of Lies, bit about he's working on Sneaky Pete and Grey's Anatomy and The Artist, which if you've not seen The Artist, it's an incredible, incredible film. All sort of shot in black and white and just Oscar-winning, superb thing. So we talk a bit about that and working on the original Cosmos as well. Here's the interview with Lawrence. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week. Hi, Lawrence.
Morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well.
Good. Where are you based?
I live in rural Oregon, if you know where that is.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's a difference. I'm usually talking to people in LA. That's way out.
It is. I need it for my sanity.
Yes. Well, that's understandable, given what LA can be like.
And New York.
Yes, yeah, that's true. So you're on to talk a bit about your career in production design and your new project, which is called Wizard of Lies.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Let's start off with, how did you get into production design? Because I've yet to meet somebody that set out to be a production designer.
Isn't that the truth? You know, we all seem to have incredibly different paths to that end goal. Like so many people, I was ignorant about art direction and production design.
Yeah.
When I was younger. You know, I came to it through, God, where do I start? I've always drawn and painted.
Yeah.
Even from when I was very young, and have always been very attached to movies. I think my route was particularly circuitous because I didn't actually start in the business until I was in my 30s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I studied art in college in Los Angeles and Tokyo. And after kicking around a little bit after college, I moved to Ireland and lived there for 10 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So in Dublin, I showed my work. I had a design practice with a friend. I worked in Fringe Theater there in Dublin. And I think that's where I fell in love with the collaborative arts.
Yeah.
And really found that even as a shy person who wanted to stay sort of in the background, I could make contributions to storytelling that were that ended up being very much larger than the individual bits, you know?
Yeah.
And my early 30s, moved back to Los Angeles. My parents were getting older. I wanted to spend some time with them.
Yeah.
And I wandered into the film business. I had some friends who had been at Art Center. And
right.
midway through Art Center course, they were all sort of seconded to Paramount and ended up doing miniatures for Star Trek for the first feature.
Wow.
And when I was still in Dublin, actually, I got a call from a friend of mine who said, well, you know, if you're not doing anything this summer, why don't you come and work with us? So my first job was actually doing miniatures.
Was that on Star Trek then?
No, it actually was on Cosmos, the original Carl Sagan.
Oh, wow, cool.
Which was remarkable. I mean, a chance to meet Carl and work on some really fun stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously I was bitten pretty hard. So moving to Hollywood, I started working on the fringes of the business, and you know, I was working in a prop house building scenery. I was a terrible builder, but ended up being given all the custom props and things.
Cool.
And had a great time and was discovered by an art director who said, now, let me get this straight. You do photography. You've done set design. You know something about lighting. You've done graphic design. You've worked in architecture. You know that adds up to art direction. And I said, well, tell me more about that. So I assisted him for a short time before going solo. Worked in commercials for 10 years.
Yeah.
Commercials and videos. Then started in television and did about 10 years of network television before I finally could make the break into features.
Wow. Yes. That's a pretty varied way of getting in, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm fortunate I'm at the point where, you know, with a modicum of experience and achievement, I'm approached all the time by younger filmmakers who want some advice about how to get in the business and how to pursue art direction, how to get training.
Yeah.
In trying to explain that everyone's path is so unique and different, I just hope that my story has something to offer them in terms of hope.
Yeah.
I teach a little bit now, so that's really huge for me. That's really big.
That's very cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Set design seems to be one way. I've known a couple of people that have done set design and sort of drifted into films from that. So particularly New York-based people.
That's a particularly valuable direction to come from.
Yeah, yeah. So the project you've been working on recently is called Wizard of Lies. It's based on the Bernie Madoff story of his sort of Ponzi scheme and the downfall from that. It's got Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer as the two leads, which is not a bad cast.
And they're incredible.
Directed by Barry Levinson. It's actually for HBO, isn't it? It's one of their features. Yeah. I mean, you talk about moving from TV to film, but I mean, with HBO with this sort of project, there's kind of not much difference, I guess.
No, there really isn't. And you know, I've always tried to approach in whatever format I'm working. You know, my approach is always the same. You know, to tell the best, design the best. The best scenery and help shape the best visual story for the best visuals for supporting and driving the story.
Yeah, yeah. Was that shot in New York? Because I'm assuming it's based around New York.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay. That's got to make life a little bit more, I suppose, easier and harder at the same time. Yeah.
Yes and no. Though it's only a handful of years ago, you know, the damage, the fallout from the Madoff, the affair Madoff is so extreme that it's still a fairly poisonous topic to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that put a lot of New York locations very out of touch for us, as you might imagine.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So there was never any chance of filming in the building where Madoff's actual offices were, or the building where his penthouse was. That in itself provided a whole set of challenges, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, it was such a huge scandal at the time. Did you ever consider about shooting somewhere else, or was it always going to be New York?
No, it really needed the texture and rhythms of New York.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. What were the particular challenges for you on that production?
Well, I think you've hit on one of them, the physical locations.
Yeah.
You know, having to replicate their penthouse, Bernie's offices, which were pretty extensive and pretty high flying.
Yeah.
You know, doing that accurately at least with emotional accuracy, was a big goal. You know, I was fortunate that my take on the visuals for the story lined up very much with Barry's take on it.
Right.
From the first time that we spoke, you know, it was apparent to us that we were basically making a mystery.
Right.
Despite the fact that everyone has this sort of civilian news consuming basic understanding of what went down and a good grasp of the scale of it, if you can grasp the scale of a $60 billion Ponzi scheme, you know, I think most people's familiarity with it stops there. I know mine did before I began digging into it. But the truth is that beyond the basic facts that we're aware of, his motivation, his ability to compartmentalize to the extent that he obviously was able to, those are mysteries.
Yeah.
Quite how and why he did this, how he could sustain it, was a great subject for Barry, I think, to take a very subjective look at it. You know, the picture, the visual arc of the story reflects his sort of, his and the screenwriter's take on it, which is to begin very objectively and then to slowly and carefully creep towards the subjective and get into Bernie's psyche.
Yeah.
So I think it's very compelling in that way.
Yeah. Does making production design for a film which is about real people cause complications as well?
I think it carries a certain responsibility.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I did a miniseries for HBO with writer-producer David Simon and his partner Bill Zorzi on this project.
Yeah.
Show Me a Hero, which was based on a true story set in Yonkers back in the 70s and 80s. And Bill and David are both journalists. And I was definitely taken to school about the responsibilities one has in telling a true story. And, you know, obviously a lot has to be changed or altered or massaged for dramatic ends. But I think that in telling true stories, I've learned to have a sense of responsibility to honor the people whose story we're telling.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Was there any contact with the Madoffs through this, with sort of either directly or family or anything like that?
No, not at all. Not at all. The only extant Madoffs, because both of the sons died, one by suicide and one by illness.
Right.
The only Madoffs are Bernie and Ruth. Ruth doesn't go to visit him anymore at Butner State Federal Correctional Facility in North Carolina. So he's pretty much there on his own for the remainder of his 150-year sentence.
Wow, that's crazy.
A sentence which the judge was legally required to express in terms of months. I don't remember the number, but it's in excess of, you know, it's up in the tens of thousands.
Yeah, that's crazy.
One thing, you know, having learned this lesson from David Simon and Bill Zorzi was, you know, you go to the sources. The closest source I could find was Diana Enriquez, who wrote the book that we based this screenplay on.
Right.
Diana was the journalist who wrote for the New York Times, who Bernie allowed to come see him in prison.
Right.
So even though I'd read Diana's book, it was important for me to talk to her about the experience of talking to Bernie and what she did and did not learn from him. So I was really fortunate. She came into my office and we sat for a couple hours, and I was able to talk to her about, not about necessarily the facts, but about her emotions about the interviews.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting for me because I can sort of pick at, well, what was the lighting like? And, you know, how did you feel about, and was it cold? You know, was it dark? And she shared with me that she hadn't really focused on it too much in her recollection until then. But she thought it was odd that they were left in a visiting room by themselves. That wasn't unusual. But no one turned on the lights. There was overhead fluorescent lighting in the room, and there was lighting on the hallway. But though the hallway was lit, the room itself was not. So there was an enclosed courtyard outside the visiting room. So through the glass from there was daylight. There was the light from the flows out in the hallway. And she sensed the light from the vending machines in the visit. So I shared that with Barry and with Igel Brill, the DP. And we were all really excited about it. So that's pretty much what we did.
Yeah.
And though I'm sure some people will think it looks remarkably theatrical in some respect, that's one of the bits of reality that I think really helped at this very dark moment in the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. The Madoff scandal was, what, almost 10 years ago?
I think it broke in 2008.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's fairly recent history, but even
just,
going back...
Just dangerously close.
Yeah. Even going back 10 years, does that create additional production issues?
Designing for recent period is really tricky because I've done several projects set in the 70s because I went back, was working with David a little bit late last year on The Deuce, which is his new series from HBO.
Yeah.
You know, it was the 70s, and that's dangerously close period because so much has changed, the churn of technological development and... Yeah. You know, particularly in the past 10 years, has been remarkable.
Yeah.
The change in very small but very critical things in our lives is something you have to pay constant attention to. It's very easy to overlook or take for granted very small things. It's usually props. You know,
yeah.
I think that decor change, shifts in decor are slightly slower these days, but they're subtle and they need to be paid attention to as well.
I mean, I guess the technology side of things is probably the most noticeable just with, you know, phones, and everybody has tablets now, and which none of that existed 10 years ago.
And all of the dozens of computer screens that were on the trading floor of Bernie's offices.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Fortunately, we're able to source all those things.
It sounds like a fascinating project. Another film which you were working on, or you have worked on, was The Artist,
yes. Which
was a fascinating and quite brilliant movie. Was there any different production challenges for something like that, particularly when you're shooting in black and white?
Yes, absolutely. Shooting, first of all, the aspect ratio, you know, everything we shoot for broadcast or theatrical distribution these days needs to resolve in HD 11x17.
Yeah.
9x16 rather. Even Academy aspect ratio was around for so long. We're not really used to the remarkably squarish rectangle that's the old original 1:3:3 format.
Yeah.
And so, you know, getting used to looking in those terms and looking and producing in black and white, obviously those are huge constraints. The thing about design is, and I've always believed that designing without constraints is incredibly difficult. You almost need to give yourself artificial constraints when you're making a brief for a project if you don't have any that are given you. But there's nothing more specific and constraining than being told that you're producing in black and white.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was great fun. It was certainly one of the best things I've ever been involved in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal piece of work. I mean, who would have thought that you would have had a black and white movie and silent black and white movie end up as an Oscar contender in
best picture winner?
I mean, just in sort of this recent history, is quite phenomenal. But it's an amazing piece of work. And
I think that's due to Michel Hazanavicius's inspiration. I mean, he came to this, he brought this project so fully formed in terms of his concept and was able to articulate and share so cleanly and clearly what it wanted to be and what it didn't want to be. And I think it happened at a time, at just sort of the right moment in theatrical storytelling.
Yeah, it's a beautiful movie. So you know, if anybody out there listening hasn't seen The Artist yet, go and get it, because it's great film.
And I think one thing that it really, really demonstrates very clearly, you know, if you watch it in a theater with people, you realize the extent to which watching a silent is that much more visual experience.
Yeah.
Without spoken dialogue and with minimal music, minimal score, not to take away from the brilliant score, you know, you become so much more invested in the story on a very different emotional level.
Yeah.
It becomes much more shared experience as well. You can hear people's laughs. You can hear tears. You can literally hear people sobbing in the audience.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable theater experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing piece of work. As you said, you have gone back and done a few bits of TV as well. I noticed one of the things on your IMDb page is the pilot for Sneaky Pete, the Amazon series, which I adore. Yeah. And we've talked.
It's great fun, isn't it?
Yeah, talked a lot about on that show. I mean, I know it's one of the things that Amazon shoot a pilot and then they wait ages and go on to a series. So was it just a case of they pulled you in for the pilot and then somebody else took the rest of the series?
Yes. Yeah. What they've done for the past, I think that might have been the first year they did it.
They make
a handful of pilots.
Yeah.
They show them with members and have everybody vote and give feedback on what they're excited to see more of.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a fantastic way of doing it. They've had some great things come out of it as well. I mean, yeah, Man in the High Castle as well, which is a phenomenal show. But Sneaky Pete, I thought was just excellent. How was it working on that project?
Oh, it's great fun. I have to say, I'm a fan of mysteries, thrillers, espionage, heist pictures, and stories about con men.
That's sort of all of that.
So fascinating about. Yeah, and Pete's character in that is just so wonderful, such a wonderful mix of sociopathic, sweet guy who just can never seem to do quite the right thing, and great story.
No, it's quite brilliant. We've talked endlessly about on the show about it. So
that's great. I'm going to have to catch up with the series and also go and listen to what you've been talking about.
Yeah, we have talked an awful lot about that, particularly when it sort of started airing. But it's such a phenomenal show. And it's just, you did a bit of time on Grey's Anatomy as well.
I actually did the pilot and the first season and designed the permanent sets. Yes,
oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I know that's a hugely popular show. I don't know what season they're on now. It's like 8, 9, something like that.
192.
Yes, it's getting there.
Without exaggeration, I have friends who've stayed with the show. My construction crew is still on it, and I think it's in like their 13th or 14th season. And kids who were toddlers, you know, or grade school kids when we began, their kids are now, you know, graduating from college, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Just got a few more general questions. What would you say has been the most interesting experience you've had whilst working?
Wow, that's tough. One of the things I have to say is that, you know, because I live in Oregon and travel for work, have for a long, long time, travel is so wrapped up with my work that it's indistinguishable at this point.
Yeah.
And I love the opportunity that filmmaking gives me to go backstage at people's lives. I go places that one shouldn't get a chance to go to. You know, I was standing in the desert in Morocco at some point several years ago and looked down because I was dripping sweat standing in the noonday sun. And I noticed my sweat was falling on my trousers, and I realized that these are getting sort of tired. I should replace them. Oh yeah, I wore these. I was in the Oval Office of the White House with these. You know, it's like the chances to go places and see things and meet people.
Yeah,
is I think as a category, the most exciting, the most fun thing. And not famous people, just being able to talk to people about what they do. I love watching people work if they're good at what they do and are invested in it and love what they do. And I don't care if that's a sign writer, a grave digger, or a politician. It's just endlessly fascinating. You know, so that's as a sort of a collective, I would say that's the most fun part of what I do. You know, I've gotten to work with incredibly talented people in Europe and South Africa and all over the States. I think rather than pick out an individual project, I just sort of say that.
Yeah. And what are you going on to do next? Assuming you can talk about whatever it is.
That remains to be seen. I'm talking to folks about a couple of projects and I'm dying to find out what it's going to be.
Okay, cool. Last couple of questions, which we ask everybody because we cover a lot of TV on the site. So first one would be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I just finished watching the entire series of Patriot.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
which is just knocked me out. I thought it was really wonderful, wonderfully inventive storytelling, and it sprawled out in surprising ways, and the cast is great.
Yes, that's one that I need to go and catch up on. I think it's definitely check it out. I think it's on Amazon over here. I'll go and have a look.
It is.
If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Wow. I don't know why my mind goes to the Twilight Zone.
You know, I think that would be fun.
I was just thinking there's now, what, 75, 85 years of television history going back to the beginning. Yeah. And for some reason, that jumped to the front of my mind. I'd love to be involved with some sort of anthology like that. I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I can see the appeal of that. Getting to do different things each week would be a good thing to get stuck into.
I think that people are starting to do that. I mean, like Black Mirror did some great stuff with a variety of directors and writers. It's really keeps things really fresh.
Yeah, we've got a new series starting over here. I think it's Amazon or AMC, I think, which is based on Philip K. Dick's short stories.
Electric Sheep is going to be starting soon.
That is sounding Black Mirror-esque.
It sounds great. And because Dick wrote just a tremendous number of great short stories, there's a lot, it's fertile ground.
Yeah, yeah. So that looks brilliant. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Thank you for coming on. I shall let you go and get back to your evening, day, morning, whatever it is in Oregon right now.
Midday.
Awesome. I shall let you get back to your day. Thank you for spending a bit of time with me.
Hey, it's been my pleasure, Dave.
Have a lovely day.
Cheers.
Bye. So that was the interview with Lawrence Bennett. Hope you really enjoyed that. If you want to go and find Wizard of Lies, it was on Sky Atlantic, so it should be on Now TV and Sky On Demand for catch up. Also, if you want to catch Sneaky Pete, season one of that is on Amazon and it's superb. So go
absolutely
and catch that.
Fantastic. In a similar Fargo sort of way with the tension and everything.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant series. Well worth going to watch. So that's on Amazon Prime if you want to go watch that. That's all that. Let's get on with some highlights for next week. So highlights for next week on TV. We're actually going to start off with one which, by the time you hear this, will have actually already aired. But we would have put it on last week's show, but we didn't get the news that it was airing until quite recently and somebody spotted it. So it's on Viceland. It's a show called Son of Zorn. It only ran for one season before it was cancelled, but I it was such an interesting idea. I think people might want to go and watch it. Starts on 12th of June, 10 p.m. on Viceland. It's about an animated character who's kind of called Zorn. He's basically He-Man. He returns to Earth after 10 years away and has to reconnect with his live-action wife because he's an animated character. So he has a live-action ex-wife and a son. It's from the writers of Wilfred, which was that wonderful show about the guy that sees the other guy in a dog costume. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who is the people behind Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and the Lego Movie and all sorts of other weird and wonderful things. So, I mean, I kind of thought this probably wouldn't last more than a season because it's such a bizarre idea because you've got this animated character mixed in with the live action stuff. But I'm quite keen to see it, to see whether it is actually any good or not and whether it's brilliant but just went over the heads of the American audience or whatever. But that's on Viceland, and so you should, hopefully the first episode will be on a catch-up system somewhere and you're able to catch it, and then you can kind of carry on watching afterwards.
I think Viceland goes on to Now TV, so.
Right, okay, so it should be on Sky On Demand and Now TV. So we've got that. Then we've got another new series starting. This is called Riviera. It's from Neil Jordan, who's an amazing writer. Stars Julia Stiles as a woman drawn into the criminal underworld after a billionaire husband is murdered. She rather discovers that his life wasn't all quite that she thought it was. It's been pushed as this year's Night Manager, basically. That's what people have been saying about it. So whether it lives up to that remains to be seen. But it's on Sky Atlantic from the 15th of June at 9 p.m. It's called Riviera. Quite looking forward to this. I think it could be a really good show. So it's one of the Sky original productions. Not sure whether it's a co-production with HBO, but it sounds like it could be really good. So that's one to watch out for. The Ranch, season 3 of that, that's Ashton Kutcher's show. That's starting on Netflix on the 16th.
Really like The Ranch, FYI.
Is it good?
a really good comedy up there. I mean, what is it with Netflix and these comedies? But yeah, really good.
Good, good. I haven't seen it, but yes, I will have to go and watch a few episodes. Yeah, okay. So that's third season, and that starts 16th of June. Second season of Baskets, it pretty much looks like they are going to run them back to back, although it shifted days. I think this is a Sunday, so it's 18th of June at 10 p.m. they're now running it, because it was running, I think, on a Thursday night or a Wednesday night, but it's now going to move, I think, to a Sunday night. So that's the second season of that show. That's coming back on Fox
again,
UK.
Really good.
I still not managed to catch up with it, but yes, it looks really good. I do really want to go and see that. I have got them all recorded, so...
Along with Silicon Valley, that's on my the weekly watch.
Yeah, it's Silicon Valley. I absolutely adore Silicon Valley and Veep. I really adore both. Renewed for new seasons. Although Silicon Valley's losing T.J.
Miller.
T.J. Miller.
Oh, are they indeed?
Yes, T.J. Miller. He's leaving at the end of this season, apparently.
Oh no!
Which is such a shame. Yeah. Well, yes, the news has been all over the place. I'm very sorry to see T.J. Miller go from Silicon Valley, but yeah.
But he's the, I don't know. It'll be a different show without him, definitely.
Yeah, it will be. Turn Washington Spies is back for its fourth and final season. That's on Amazon Prime, 19th of June. This is quite good, actually. I've seen a few episodes of this, and it was quite good. But again, there's so much. It's one of those things that there's a lot of stuff on. I haven't quite got back to it yet. But I did see a few episodes of it. Really, really good show. Now it's got kind of full seasons. It's one of those that I may go back to, so I can just binge watch and wade through everything. Ripper Street, fifth and final season, comes to BBC Two. So if you're not watching on Amazon, BBC Two, 19th of June at 9 p.m, the final season of Ripper Street, season 5, comes on to there. And Chance, which is Hugh Laurie's new show, comes to Universal. That's I think that's already renewed for a second season as well. That's Universal Channel have got that from the 20th of June at 9 p.m, and that's called Chance. So that's one to look out for. So unless you've got anything else to add, I think that's everything.
No, that's it. Go and see Wonder Woman. It's great.
Yeah, go and see Wonder Woman. We both really enjoyed it. Both got a thumbs up, so yes. Definitely worth watching. And if you want to find out the latest news throughout the week, all you need to do is go to geektown.co.uk. You find all the latest news and air dates. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email them to us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, or leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram, where we've got loads and loads of cosplay photos still from MCM Comic Con. That's on Geektown UK. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.